Chapter 15. To the disparity of these numbers it is to be considered and allowed for, that according to our usual opinion who were then upon the spot, there were not one-third of the people in the town during the months of August and September as were in the months of January and February. In a word, the usual number, that used to die of these three articles, and, as I hear, did die of them the year before, was thus. 1664. 1665. Childbed 189, childbed 625, abortive, and stillborn 458, abortive, and stillborn 617, 647, 1242. This inequality, I say, is exceedingly augmented when the numbers of people are considered. I pretend not to make any exact calculation of the numbers of people which were at this time in the city, but I shall make a probable conjecture at that part by and by. What I have said now is to explain the misery of those poor creatures above, so that it might well be said, as in the scripture, woe be to those who are with child, and to those which give suck in that day. For, indeed, it was a woe to them in particular. I was not conversant in many particular families where these things happened, but the outcries of the miserable were heard afar off. As to those who were with child, we have seen some calculation made. 291 women dead in childbed in 9 weeks, out of one-third part of the number, of whom there usually died in that time, but 84 of the same disaster. Let the reader calculate the proportion. There is no room to doubt, but the misery of those that gave suck was in proportion as great. Our bills of mortality could give but little light in this, yet some it did. There were several more than usual starved at nurse, but this was nothing. The misery was where they were, first, starved for want of a nurse, the mother dying, and all the family and the infants found dead by them, merely for want. And, if I may speak my opinion, I do believe that many hundreds of poor helpless infants perished in this manner. Secondly, not starved, but poisoned by the nurse. Nay, even where the mother has been nurse, and having received the infection, has poisoned, that is, infected the infant with her milk, even before they knew they were infected themselves. Nay, and the infant has died in such a case before the mother. I cannot but remember to leave this admonition upon record, if ever such another dreadful visitation should happen in this city, that all women that are with child or that give suck should be gone, if they have any possible means, out of the place, because their misery, if infected, will so much exceed all other people's. I could tell here dismal stories of living infants being found sucking the breasts of their mothers, or nurses, after they have been dead of the plague. Of a mother in the parish where I lived, who, having a child that was not well, sent for an apothecary to view the child, and when he came, as the relation goes, was giving the child suck at her breast, and to all appearance, was herself very well. But when the apothecary came close to her, he saw the tokens upon that breast with which she was suckling the child. He was surprised enough, to be sure, but, not willing to fright the poor woman too much, he desired she would give the child into his hand. So he takes the child, and going to a cradle in the room, lays it in, and opening its cloths, found the tokens upon the child too, and both died. Before he could get home to send a preventive medicine to the father of the child, to whom he had told their condition. Whether the child infected the nurse mother, or the mother the child was not certain, but the last most likely. Likewise of a child brought home to the parents from a nurse, that had died of the plague, yet the tender mother would not refuse to take in her child, and laid it in her bosom, by which she was infected, and died with the child, in her arms dead also. It would make the hardest heart move at the instances, that were frequently found of tender mothers tending and watching with their dear children, and even dying before them, and sometimes taking the distemper from them and dying, when the child for whom the affectionate heart had been sacrificed has got over it and escaped. The like of a tradesman in East Smithfield, whose wife was big with child of her first child, and fell in labor, having the plague upon her. He could neither get midwife to assist her, or nurse to tend her, and two servants which he kept, fled both from her. He ran from house to house like one distracted, but could get no help. The utmost he could get was, that a watchman, who attended at an infected house shut up, promised to send a nurse in the morning. The poor man, with his heart broke, went back, assisted his wife what he could, acted the part of the midwife, brought the child dead into the world, and his wife in about an hour died in his arms, where he held her dead body fast till the morning, when the watchman came and brought the nurse as he had promised. And coming up the stairs, for he had left the door open, or only latched, they found the man sitting with his dead wife in his arms, and so overwhelmed with grief, that he died in a few hours after without any sign of the infection upon him, but merely sunk under the weight of his grief. I have heard also of some who, on the death of their relations, have grown stupid with the insupportable sorrow, and of one, in particular, who was so absolutely overcome with the pressure upon his spirits that by degrees his head sank into his body, so between his shoulders, that the crown of his head was very little seen above the bone of his shoulders, and by degrees losing both voice and sense, his face, looking forward, lay against his collarbone, and could not be kept up any otherwise, unless held up by the hands of other people. And the poor man never came to himself again, but languished near a year in that condition, and died. Nor was he ever once seen to lift up his eyes, or to look upon any particular object. I cannot undertake to give any other than a summary of such passages as these, because it was not possible to come at the particulars, where sometimes the whole families, where such things happened, were carried off by the distemper. But there were innumerable cases of this kind which presented to the eye and the ear, even in passing along the streets, as I have hinted above. Nor is it easy to give any story of this or that family which there was not divers parallel stories, to be met with of the same kind. But as I am now talking of the time, when the plague raged at the easternmost part of the town, how for a long time the people of those parts had flattered themselves that they should escape, and how they were surprised when it came upon them as it did. For, indeed, it came upon them like an armed man when it did come. I say, this brings me back to the three poor men who wandered from Wapping, not knowing whither to go, or what to do, and whom I mentioned before, one a biscuit baker, one a seal maker, and the other a joiner, all of Wapping, or thereabouts. The sleepiness and security of that part, as I have observed, was such that they, not only did not shift for themselves as others did, but they boasted of being safe, and of safety being with them. And many people fled out of the city, and out of the infected suburbs, to Wapping, Ratcliffe, Limehouse, Poplar, and such places, as two places of security, and it is not at all unlikely that their doing this helped to bring the plague that way faster than it might otherwise have come. For though I am much for people flying away, and emptying such a town as this upon the first appearance of a like visitation, and that all people who have any possible retreat should make use of it in time and be gone, yet I must say, when all that will fly are gone, those that are left, and must stand it should stand stock still where they are, and not shift from one end of the town or one part of the town to the other. For that is the bane and mischief of the whole, and they carry the plague from house to house in their very clothes. Wherefore were we ordered to kill all the dogs and cats, but because as they were domestic animals, and are apt to run from house to house, and from street to street, so they are capable of carrying the effluvia or infectious streams of bodies infected even in their furs and hair. And therefore it was that, in the beginning of the infection, an order was published by the Lord Mayor, and by the magistrates, according to the advice of the physicians, that all the dogs and cats should be immediately killed, and an officer was appointed for the execution. It is incredible, if their account is to be depended upon, what a prodigious number of those creatures were destroyed. I think they talked of 40,000 dogs, and 5 times as many cats. Few houses being without a cat, some having several, sometimes 5 or 6 in a house. All possible endeavors were used also, to destroy the mice and rats, especially the latter, by laying ratsmen and other poisons for them, and a prodigious multitude of them were also destroyed. I often reflected upon the unprovided condition, that the whole body of the people were in at the first coming of this calamity upon them, and how it was for want of timely entering into measures and managements, as well public as private, that all the confusions that followed were brought upon us, and that such a prodigious number of people sank in that disaster, which, if proper steps had been taken, might, Providence concurring, have been avoided, and which, if posterity think fit, they may take a caution and warning from. But I shall come to this part again. I come back to my 3 men. Their story has a moral in every part of it, and their whole conduct, and that of some whom they joined with, is a pattern for all poor men to follow, or women either, if ever such a time comes again. And if there was no other end in recording it, I think this a very just one, whether my account be exactly according to fact or no. 2 of them are said to be brothers, the one an old soldier, but now a biscuit maker, the other a lame sailor, but now a sail maker, the third a joiner. Says John the biscuit maker one day to Thomas his brother, the sail maker, "Brother Tom, what will become of us? The plague grows hot in the city, and increases this way. What shall we do?" "Truly," says Thomas, "I am at a great loss what to do, for I find, if it comes down into Wapping I shall be turned out of my lodging." And thus they began to talk of it beforehand. John. "Turned out of your lodging, Tom, if you are, I don't know who will take you in. For people are so afraid of one another now, there's no getting a lodging anywhere." Thomas. "Why, the people where I lodge are good civil people, and have kindness enough for me to. But they say I go abroad every day to my work, and it will be dangerous. And they talk of locking themselves up, and letting nobody come near them." John. "Why, they are in the right, to be sure, if they resolve to venture staying in town." Thomas. "Nay, I might even resolve to stay within doors too, for, except a suit of sails, that my master has in hand, and which I am just finishing, I am like to get no more work a great while. There's no trade stirs now. Workmen and servants are turned off everywhere, so that I might be glad to be locked up too, but I do not see they will be willing to consent to that, any more than to the other." John. "Why, what will you do then, brother? And what shall I do, for I am almost as bad as you? The people where I lodge are all gone into the country but a maid, and she is to go next week, and to shut the house quite up, so that I shall be turned adrift to the wide world before you, and I am resolved to go away to, if I knew, but where to go." Thomas. "We were both distracted, we did not go away at first. Then we might have traveled anywhere. There's no stirring now. We shall be starved if we pretend to go out of town. They won't let us have victuals, no, not for our money, nor let us come into the towns, much less into their houses." John. "And that which is almost as bad, I have but little money to help myself with neither." Thomas. "As to that, we might make shift. I have a little, though not much. But I tell you there's no stirring on the road. I know a couple of poor honest men in our street have attempted to travel, and at Barnet, or Whetstone, or thereabouts, the people offered to fire at them, if they pretended to go forward, so they are come back again quite discouraged." John. "I would have ventured their fire, if I had been there. If I had been denied food for my money they should have seen me take it before their faces, and if I had tendered money for it, they could not have taken any course with me by law." Thomas. "You talk your old soldier's language, as if you were in the Low Countries now, but this is a serious thing. The people have good reason to keep anybody off, that that they are not satisfied are sound, at such a time as this, and we must not plunder them. John. No, brother, you mistake the case, and mistake me too. I would plunder nobody, but for any town upon the road, to deny me leave to pass through the town in the open highway, and deny me provisions for my money, is to say the town has a right to starve me to death, which cannot be true. Thomas. But they do not deny you liberty to go back again from whence you came, and therefore they do not starve you. John. But the next town behind me will, by the same rule, deny me leave to go back, and so they do starve me between them. Besides, there is no law to prohibit my traveling wherever I will on the road. Thomas. But there will be so much difficulty in disputing with them at every town on the road, that it is not for poor men to do it or undertake it, at such a time as this is especially. John. Why, brother, our condition at this rate is worse than anybody else's, for we can neither go away nor stay here. I am of the same mind with the lepers of Samaria. If we stay here we are sure to die, I mean especially as you and I are stated, without a dwelling house of our own, and without lodging in anybody else's. There is no lying in the street at such a time as this. We had as good go into the dead cart at once. Therefore I say, if we stay here we are sure to die, and if we go away we can but die. I am resolved to be gone. Thomas. You will go away. Whither will you go, and what can you do? I would as willingly go away as you, if I knew whither. But we have no acquaintance, no friends. Here we were born, and here we must die. John. Look you, Tom, the whole kingdom is my native country as well as this town. You may as well say I must not go out of my house, if it is on fire, as that I must not go out of the town I was born in, when it is infected with the plague. I was born in England, and have a right to live in it if I can. Thomas. But you know every vagrant person may by the laws of England be taken up, and passed back to their last legal settlement. John. But how shall they make me vagrant? I desire only to travel on, upon my lawful occasions. Thomas. What lawful occasions can we pretend to travel, or rather wander upon? They will not be put off with words. John. Is not flying to save our lives a lawful occasion? And do they not all know that the fact is true? We cannot be said to dissemble. Thomas. But suppose they let us pass, whither shall we go? John. Anywhere, to save our lives. It is time enough to consider that when we are got out of this town. If I am once out of this dreadful place, I care not where I go. Thomas. We shall be driven to great extremities. I know not what to think of it. John. Well, Tom, consider of it a little. This was about the beginning of July, and though the plague was come forward in the west and north parts of the town, yet all Wapping, as I have observed before, and Redriff, and Ratdiff, and Limehouse, and Poplar, in short, Deptford and Greenwich, all both sides of the river from the Hermitage, and from over against it, quite down to Blackwall, was entirely free. There had not one person died of. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.